How about it? A Sixers opening night win is in the books, and it was an enjoyable one to watch. The Sixers coming together with some great team chemistry. So glad you could join us here on the Sixers Talk podcast, brought to you by Wilmington University, WilmU Works. Our guy, Noah Levick, the Sixers writer for NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com here joining us. Ben Berry, our producer in the wings for this podcast. And Noah, it started out really well. The second quarter was a little choppy, but the third and fourth quarters was what the formula Sixers fans have been waiting for. As Joel Embiid sat the fourth quarter and they got, you know, four guys and 20 points or more. And the Sixers get a W against the New Orleans Pelicans. Did you like what you saw?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think just first off, you got to say, to be frank, it was nice to focus on a basketball game for a night. And we have to acknowledge Ben Simmons wasn't there. He's suspended for conduct detrimental to the team, but it felt oddly normal. And like the Sixers were just competing and doing their thing. And of course, as I think we probably all expected, Joel Embiid set a really strong tone, 10 points in the first 5 minutes. And then Furkan Korkmaz, when he's got his game, he's a very fun basketball player who's capable of these game-changing spurts, puts up 18 in the fourth, four threes, can't miss, is chucking up heat checks, and they're going down, and a lot of fun stuff in the bayou for the Sixers. So, yeah, couldn't have asked for a much better start to the season. As you said, some shakiness, as you'd expect, given they're integrating new pieces. But the second unit was very impressive, not just Korkmaz. 45-17 edge for the Sixers bench. Both George Niang and Andre Drummond, I think, were as advertised. Niang knocking down threes and Drummond just gobbling up rebounds. 17
rebounds
in like 19 minutes. So he's always been able to do that well, but this was vintage Drummond in that aspect of just anything in his remote vicinity, he was going to grab it. So a lot of positives on night one for the Sixers.
Yeah, fantastic. And like you said, man, just happy to focus on basketball. And we need to just really give credit to the players, because sometimes it's hard to determine, you know, what is, you know, quote unquote coach speak or just, you know, lip service coming from the players. But they have said continually, from Joel Embiid all the way down the ladder, that we have good chemistry. You know, we're playing well. This team is coming together, even with all the Ben Simmons distractions and, you know, people inundating them with questions regarding that. They had steadfastly stuck to the line that, you know, we're playing well. There's good basketball going on here. And they follow that up by reportedly, as we found out after the game, having this team meal down in New Orleans before, you know, getting to this game. And, you know, New Orleans is a great place to have a team meal, you know, if you're going to, you know, come together as a squad. But you're just seeing the maturity from this team. Joel saying afterward, that's something that he never, you know, did in the past. He was always a guy who stuck to his room, you know, on the road and, you know, played video games and whatnot. But this team meal, you know, getting to know each other, and the chemistry was evident on the court. We saw the extra passes. We saw unselfishness. We saw some shot making. And, you know, another kudos has to be given to the Sixers front office, who helped assemble this team. You know, they pick George Niang off of, you know, Utah's, you know, he didn't re-sign with them and signed a two-year deal here. You see Andre Drummond, like you mentioned, fourth in rebounding last year here, bringing 17 rebounds to opening night. Joel Embiid sits the whole fourth quarter. It was a great formula here for the Sixers to get back in the win column.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Korkmaz has yet to hit a three tonight, and there it is. Furkan rattling home the triple. Let's see if the second unit can do what Mark and the coach just talked about. Back-to-back threes for Furkan Korkmaz. Drummond, the screen, and Korkmaz has another heat check for Furkan. Three triples this quarter. Here comes Ingram, and well done by Thibel to track back and steal it back. Furkan, Korkmaz, make it four in the fourth for the Turkish superstar, Furkan Korkmaz. Is it getting hot in here, or is it just fur?
The Korkmaz stuff, though, since you brought it up, had to surprise you a little bit that he just catches fire. And you could tell he was feeling it because he was hunting those threes. That's got to be an X factor, you know, that really, you know, you're looking for, you know, backcourt help and, you know, the absence of Simmons, the absence of Shake Milton. That's a great harbinger of what's to come going into this Brooklyn game where you think they're going to need some more firepower.
Yeah, it's nothing new for Korkmaz. This has always been something that he's brought to the table where he can just get extremely hot, and he's not going to leave the game wondering if that hot streak would have been sustained. He's going to keep it up. Right. I think what was a little bit unique last night, and of course we saw it from him as well in the preseason, is he's running second unit point guard and looking pretty comfortable in that role. I think the first few minutes were a bit shaky, and I just think overall that bench unit at times was a little bit too unselfish and didn't seem totally in sync. But for the most part, Korkmaz looked comfortable with the ball in his hands and facilitated offense well and was aggressive and put pressure on the New Orleans defense. It was funny. I was thinking, like, who does Korkmaz remind me of at point guard? And not 100%, but at least in terms of the frame and the flair, there's a little bit of LaMelo Ball there. Tall ball handler. Yes. You see it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Well, LaMelo went nuts. I think he had 7 threes last night. So Cork needs to catch up.
Yeah. Obviously, LaMelo, a little more talented as a passer and a little more of a pure point guard. But just that kind of guy where when he's in the groove, your eyes are drawn to him and he has fun playing the game of basketball and has some creativity and flair that he likes to show. So encouraging from Korkmaz. I think just inevitably we're probably due for a cold game here or there, but the Sixers will ride the hot hand for as long as it lasts.
We'll try to separate, compartmentalize things here, but I think it's good starting here with the kind of Joel Embiid, Furkan Korkmaz conversation, the two leading scorers here at 22 points for the team. We'll delve into Maxi and give some kudos to Tobias Harris, Mr. Steady as She Goes, in a little bit. But it's funny because I forgot who made the pass, but Korkmaz filling the lane in transition, tries to catch a body under the rim. Ends up getting fouled. It was just one of those nights for the Sixers and Korkmaz specifically. And, you know, you mentioned his 18 points in the fourth quarter. I mean, it was, the third quarter the Sixers pulled away and it was, you know, a little bit of back and forth there. But I was just really surprised by the way they pulled away in the end. I thought that obviously they were the better team, but to secure the 20-point victory and to move into, you know, Thursday with a day off with no practice and then into Friday's game, it just was, you know, Joel Embiid, like I mentioned, sitting the fourth quarter with Tobias, it just was the perfect way to end that game and to have that second unit kind of come together after that shakiness, you know, in the second period. And let's talk about that second unit a little bit more because they were the ones that helped, you know, give Joel a spell. When it looked like he had tweaked his knee a little bit or something had happened there and he wasn't, you know, he was kind of off his, off balance a little bit or something happened. I mean, offensively, he still was scoring a basketball with 12 in the first quarter, but give the second unit props because he needed a spell. Andre Drummond came in and that second unit provided that and kind of, you know, it was tied at the half. So it wasn't perfect, but it was what the team needed at the right time. And in the end, they were also able to deliver.
Yeah, with Embiid, I don't know if, given his history, you can even classify that as an injury scare, but that was definitely a sign that Sixers basketball was back. And there was, you know, maybe a little bit of fans holding their breath when you see him.
Right. Fans holding their breath at Sixers basketball go hand in hand. Right.
Yeah, but I mean, outside of that, he looked very good physically, I thought. He's clearly in good physical shape. Clearly does not seem bogged down by the meniscus tear from last
week. No, they came out of the locker room, him and Brandon Ingram going jumper for jumper, bro. Mm-hmm. Jumper for jumper.
Yeah, that was auspicious when Embiid banked the first one in, and then you saw the slow-mo pump fake was effective because New Orleans was respecting Embiid's three balls. So, liked what I saw from him from the jump. Yeah, I mean, it was a little scratchy initially for the second unit, but I think we saw a lot of why Doc Rivers was raving about that group during training camp. Though there is not a conventional point guard with Shake Milton out because of this right ankle sprain, it's just a lot of players who enjoy sharing the ball, like to cut, like to move. It was kind of what we've seen from the preseason from Andre Drummond, where he's very enthusiastic about passing and he's skilled and has good vision. Couple of ill-advised tosses. I think there was one where he grabbed an offensive rebound and for some reason immediately tried a behind-the-back pass. So you'd like to see him.
Oh, out to the three-point line. Right.
I'm not sure exactly what he intended there, but the bottom line is, you know, overall on that unit, you have players who like to share the ball, who seem to have developed some good early chemistry. So you like to see all of that. You can't do much better than scoring the first 14 bench points of the game. I mean, that's a real strong opening night sort of statement.
Yeah, the Sixers bench really came through, drubbing the New Orleans bench and points off the bench. Curious, though, sticking with Embiid, too many jump shots for you. He had talked about, you know, in training camp that he was going to shoot more threes probably and that the team themselves were going to shoot more threes. Like I said, at the start of that third quarter, it was him and Brandon Ingram just going jumper for jumper on each end. You mix in the couple of threes that he hit, not a whole lot of layups, not a whole lot of high percentage shots for him. The jumper was clicking, though, and he really just looked like he picked up where he left off last season with the MVP form. But would you like to see him, you know, more dominant in the interior, or are you okay with the amount of 15-footers and threes?
Yeah, I'm not going to nitpick on the mid-range game, especially just because he was so incredibly efficient at that last season and was one of the main reasons I think he was the MVP runner-up.
I don't think he had a dunk. Did he even have a dunk last night?
I can't remember one, no.
Right.
Yeah, a few driving layups, but no dunks. I do think when the jumper's not falling for him, we know it's very reliable to just invite contact and wear out, you know, the path to that foul line. If you're going to criticize, I guess maybe you can say in that second quarter when the mid-range isn't falling, he could try to draw contact a little more, but for the most part, I think you've got to trust Joel Embiid's decision-making, and you've got to trust that he's evolved into this elite mid-range jump shooter. Perhaps he isn't going to sustain that to the extent he did last season, but it's not a fluke at this point. Like, he is a very good mid-range shooter. He's, for a center, an above-average three-point shooter, and fair enough that the jump shot is a major part of his game. So, that's kind of how I see it from Embiid. I do think it was notable Doc Rivers mentioned to reporters afterwards in New Orleans that he didn't love the post spacing around Embiid. And I think it's predictable that that's going to be an adjustment. Ben Simmons, obviously, the default spot for him was the dunker spot. And now you have guys like Danny Green and Tyrese Maxey who are standing there and are not necessarily comfortable with being anywhere besides outside of the arc when their center has the ball. So the spacing wasn't always perfect last night, and it's going to be an adjustment to figure out like where to stand and how to move around Embiid in the post. And perhaps over time that improves a little bit and that makes life a little bit easier for Embiid down there.
Yeah, I didn't think the spacing was correct on a lot of the double teams because he didn't have an easier outlet on some of those, but definitely something in Embiid's game that has evolved and changed and gotten better. And I'm sure, like you said, they'll figure that out as things go along, because the lack of Simmons doesn't drag a defender, you know, down there below the rim where these other guys are on the outside. But to a point you just made, and we don't have to belabor it, but Embiid becoming an elite mid-range jump shooter, his game has evolved and changed and grown in the years that he's been in the NBA. And you look at the Ben Simmons situation, and so much of the issue is people are asking for that same thing from Simmons, but he's not willing to do that. So I just want to make that example of just what the commitment is to being better at basketball from a player like of Embiid's status, and how that has propelled him into this MVP conversation and this elite level of shot making and being an NBA star, where you're not getting that development, you know, and that growth, you know, from Benson. And you see in other players as well, Tyrese Maxey, which we'll get into, Tobias Harris as well, the growth and the transition they've made from where they started to where they are is now as NBA players. And that's what you're looking for from Ben Simmons, but the payoff just isn't there, and it hasn't been in the growth in his game. So you feel me on that?
Yeah, no, it's a fair parallel. It has always stood out to me with Embiid. You know, he gets back from an offseason, or even he's looking at the offseason ahead, and he's genuinely excited. Like, okay, I'm going to work with my guy Drew Hanlon, and we're going to add this new tool to my game that's going to make it impossible for guys to double team me, or going to just add this new weapon that defenses aren't able to cope with. I believe it was a season or two ago, he added that the fadeaway, he really worked on incorporating that to his game, and you saw defenders really struggled to guard that. And you can just see it's something Embiid savors. Like, okay, I have this weakness, or I have this area that defense is going to attack, and they're not going to be able to do that anymore once I put in the time to address that. So yeah, absolutely, he deserves praise for it. And yeah, fair enough to say that Ben Simmons has not evolved in a comparable way.
And I think it's just worth mentioning just how average Joel can make opposing centers look. Like Jonas Valanciunas, you know, he got the new contract before the game. He's, you know, what was he, third in the league in rebounding last year? But for some reason, he's out there missing bunnies, just not looking comfortable, you know, with Joel out there. And, you know, the Sixers helped use that to propel them to victory. But I think he was like 3 for 20 from the floor was Valanciunas, just looking bad out there. So, you know, credit to Joel for also being involved in that as well.
Yeah, I mean, something that did come to mind last night, in part because Valanciunas shot 3 for 19 and couldn't buy anything around the rim. Is,
3 for 19.
Yeah, but, you know, assuming the Sixers are moving forward here without Ben Simmons, there's a real opportunity for Embiid to highlight his defensive value. So, of course, you know, in those individual matchups, he tends to get the better of the opposing center, but I think we also saw last night, he's probably going to have to do a bit more as a rim protector. And we saw that he mixed it up in pick and roll coverage. He did hedge some, he did blitz some. You know, the default was still the drop coverage, but he showed off some of that versatility and the exceptional movement for a 7-foot, 280-pound guy. And I think, you know, if the Sixers are a Ben Simmons-less team for the duration of the season, a lot of folks are going to be more aware of just how immense an impact Joel Embiid has defensively.
Ready to make a move? A Wilmington University education can take you where you want to go. WilmU works online or in person. Learn more at wilmu.edu.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
A lot to like after that Sixers victory, and we had to try to navigate not talking about these guys in that first segment, and Tobias Harris and Tyrese Maxey. I don't know which of those guys you want to start with. I think it's probably doing a disservice to Tobias not to acknowledge how rock solid he is and how much he brings a steadying force to this team. Off the court, he has been, as players have mentioned, the guy that has helped keep this team galvanized along with Joel Embiid through leadership. And I'm sure that team dinner was part of his doing as well, because, you know, we heard about him in the bubble and how much, you know, he was a part of those group texts and bringing people together after the pandemic. He just really leads by example, as I just mentioned, off the court and on the court last night. You know, trying to really probably pick up with that 50-40-90 pace he was on last season. And just besides missing 2 3-pointers, he was right there at it, 4 for 5 from the free throw line, 20 points, a super efficient night from the floor. And it seemed like he was letting the game come to him and not really forcing it. And he got a steal and a layup, and on he went from there.
Yeah, I feel like when Tobias Harris plays well, which is most of the games nowadays, that there's usually not much, you know, convoluted analysis that's necessary. He's decisive. He scores pretty efficiently, and he just kind of plays his game. And I think steady is the perfect word. He's really reliable for the Sixers, which, given all the uncertainty and chaos around these teams, as you said, is important on and off the court. So yeah, credit to him for sort of picking up where he left off, at least in the regular season last year. And I think the reality is for both him and this team, a lot of how they'll be judged is the postseason. And you know, that will be a major test for him many months down the line. But yeah, for now, encouraging start. Nice too, given that he was sidelined for a bit with this right knee. And the right knee was an issue last season as well. So I think perhaps you did wonder whether he would be at all compromised physically, but that absolutely was not the case. I think he looked as explosive as he usually does. And the Sixers did a good job of finding mismatches for him in the post. And he, you know, he was Tobias Harris. So that's the bottom line.
Yeah, and it's just from watching the other shot makers out there, it felt a bit like they weren't as dependent on Tobias hitting 3-pointers as they had been in the past, where at times he might have been one of the only guys on the floor, particularly when he was running with the second unit last season, that was making threes at a clip that you could be, you know, expectant of it. And here, you know, last night, George Niang obviously hit, and Furkan, Seth Curry. It was a lot of Joel Embiid. It was a lot of guys, you know, alleviating some of that load. Not that it was a huge burden for him, but it was definitely a point where I feel like I really looked at Tobias to be the scoring on the floor at times. And I didn't feel that way when his shot from outside wasn't going down, that I didn't feel as desperate or desperate for the team, so to speak. Did you notice any of that? Did you feel like the team as a whole kind of really contributed to the shooting success from the outside, and he didn't have to, you know, carry as much of that weight?
Yeah, they still didn't put up a ton of threes. I believe it was only 25 on the night, but as you said, multiple.
Which is below their average from last season, right?
Yeah, even below last season where they were a bottom 5 team in 3-point frequency. But yeah, multiple guys can shoot it well, I think.
Are you going to make like 13 to 15 of them? Well, you'll take that.
Yeah, that works. Know. And yeah, right. just a lot of shooting threats on the floor that defenses have to respect. Doc Rivers did ride with that all bench unit for quite a while, I think.
Yeah.
We see it's a priority for him to develop a good level of continuity there and to kind of get that group gelling together. I am curious whether Harris will at times be like the lone starter on the floor with the bench, as was often the case last season. I think the plans were maybe thrown out of whack a little last night because Danny Green got in foul trouble. So that meant extended minutes for Matisse Thybulle. They needed him on the floor, obviously, to guard Brandon Ingram. So Thybulle was important there. Picked up just a casual four steals and a block. No big deal for him. But yeah, I think Tobias Harris, you'd imagine there will be situations again where he's on the floor with three or four bench players and he's got a score and there's a lot of pressure on him to make something happen in isolation. But it's encouraging that that wasn't the case on opening night. And as you said, it didn't feel like he had a massive burden on him. And the Sixers were a very well-balanced offensive team.
I think still a bit under the radar in my estimation for what he has contributed and brought to this squad. After, you know, the bumpy road, after signing the contract and people, you know, so many naysayers popping up and then, you know, really coming. I'm sure he really wants to make that all-star team this year after being snubbed last year. So I know that's probably a mid-season goal for him, but I think a lot of props need to be handed his way. But sharing some of those props for the Sixers' success has to be Tyrese Maxey. I mean, he goes 8 of 14 from the floor. He has 20 points as well. And he overcame some obstacles, some poor first half shooting, and some tougher, you know, decisions that didn't go his way. But he comes out on the high side of it. And like he said after the game, you know, we won. So, you know, the numbers and all of that stuff really are – I'm kind of go over my head, to paraphrase. So he was just focused on winning, which is what you want to hear from, you know, your point guard or any player for that matter. What did you see from Tyrese that you liked, and where did you see the growth in him from last year to this year in this game in particular?
Yeah, I liked that from the start of the game, you didn't get the vibe of, oh, wow, Tyrese is the starting point guard, and this means there are these massive, unfamiliar responsibilities on his plate. And I think credit there goes both to Doc Rivers and to the Sixers star players for being focal points of the offense, and therefore Maxey actually not handling the ball as that much. So I think a lot ran through Joel Embiid and Tobias Harris in the post. I think the team as a whole did a nice job of playing in transition and not needing a ton of half-court possessions. We saw a lot of like Seth Curry, Iverson cuts, and the Sixers kind of beginning trips with those Curry, Embiid side pick and rolls. So I think that was all helpful in Maxey just having the ability to sort of ease into the action. And then I think Maxey also deserves a ton of credit for just being really sharp and playing his game and picking his spots effectively. So we know he's got that dynamic scoring ability and he's got that burst to the rim. Of course, him knocking down a couple three balls is always, you know, a feather in his cap and something
yes.
that makes you optimistic about the future. But for last night, for me, I think just playing off the star talent, not holding the ball that much, and just making the most of when he did have a good matchup or when he did have ahead of steam. So yeah, you can't do much better for him than 20 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, I believe only 1 turnover. And yeah, just whatever's thrown his way, he's just extraordinary in his ability to adjust to it and look like it's well within his capacity to handle. So, well, yeah, well done by Tyrese.
Hey, man. You know, it has been a long time since the Sixers have hit so well in the draft with Thybulle and Maxey and back-to-back drafts. You would hate and see why the Sixers have coveted Tyrese Maxey, and you would hate to see him be the thing that would have to be a kicker in a trade with Ben Simmons or something like that, because you can see the development and how far he's coming along here with this team. Maxie, great job filling in, and he's been running with the first team all during training camp because of Ben Simmons' absence. A guy who had an incredible preseason, but didn't have a great opening night, is Isaiah Joe. I wanted to talk about him a bit. He had a tough time, you know, getting the ball up the floor at one point and got subbed out. He ended up with 0 points, didn't connect on any of his shots. Danny Green got into foul trouble, and I think that really what resulted in his donut. Isaiah Joe, it seemed, had a bit of a short leash. Did you think that you would see more from him, considering 15, 18, 20 points in the preseason? I forget what he had in the last game, but did you feel like you would see more of him, and were you surprised that he didn't rise to the occasion?
No, yeah, not going to read too much into it. I think, yeah, on a night where the Sixers had four guys score 20 plus points, like, everyone can't do that. Not everyone's going to shoot the ball that well. I think as far as what would be like a more valid longer term concern with him is, as you alluded to, kind of dealing with the ball pressure. And even though he did put on muscle this offseason, like, he's undersized, you know, he's, I believe, 6'3", and he doesn't weigh a lot. He's going to be out-muscled by most opponents that he goes up against in this, his second year. So dealing with the ball pressure, yeah, I'm curious how he's going to handle that moving forward. But I would really like Doc Rivers to continue giving him minutes and see what he's got. I think he was the best player for the Sixers, just point blank, in the preseason, and one uneven regular season performance isn't going to entirely dissuade me that this is a player who has some intriguing qualities on both ends of the floor. I think the defensive effort and commitment and intensity was still good last night. Took a charge on a near 7-footer in Jackson Hayes, sacrificing the body on that play.
He got bowled over too.
Yeah, no, I mean, he took that one right in the chest, and he also went down on a scary play in the fourth on a drive. Fortunately, returned to the action.
Happy to see him come back. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but I still think this is a young player who's going to have some growing pains, and if I'm Doc Rivers, I think it makes sense to continue giving him opportunities and see what he's got.
George Niang and Seth Curry seem to be kind of carbon copies of each other, just shot making from the outside. And it just shooters on this team have been something people have clamored for so long. A shame that Ben Simmons isn't on the team to benefit from, you know, being surrounded by these shooters. Matisse Thybulle, Seth Curry, George Niang, all role players who played their roles really well. If the Sixers can continue to get more of that, I think my point with the Isaiah Joe thing is that you have the opportunity with the dearth in the backcourt with, you know, Shake Milton and Ben Simmons being out. There was just opportunity there that could be seized. George Niang, Seth Curry, and Matisse Thybulle seized whatever opportunity was there for them in their roles. You would have liked to see Matisse, you know, come out with this fabulous 3-point shot or something that, you know, we have, you know, kind of envisioned and hoped for from him. But like you said, it's so much success and great things that happened in the game. It's no need to nitpick or, you know, overreact to things last night. I want to take a time out here, but when we come back, I want to hear from you on your season prediction. I don't think we got that from you. I'm curious if what happened last night changed that at all. You're so level-headed. I'm going to imagine it didn't, but I'm going to want to hear from you after we take this time out, but where you think the Sixers will finish this year. Ready to make a move? A Wilmington University education can take you where you want to go. WilmU works online or in person. Learn more at wilmu.edu. You know what, Noah? In the content room, and they were preparing for Sixers pregame live, and Mark Jackson and Jim Lynham and Amy Fadul were all throwing out their season predictions. And Jim Lynham and Amy were going for the moon. They were going for the 60s. They were going, you know, like, you know, they were both saying that the team would do really well. Mark was a little bit more, you know, 4-5 seed type of attitude, 6 seed possibly, but not lower than that. I think Ben and I on the podcast had been in that, of that same ilk, that maybe from, you know, somewhere from 3-6 or you know, maybe 4, 5, or 6, maybe something like that was where they'll finish. How many wins, where do you think those wins get them in the end of things this season, the regular season? How do you see things playing out with the team that's here now? Of course, the Simmons trade could change that considerably, but what are your expectations coming into the season for this team?
Yeah, I think my gut feel is 3-6 is most likely. I'm really reluctant to make predictions just given Simmons and how much we don't know there.
Sure.
And yeah, you're having to do a lot of projections that you wouldn't normally have to, like, okay, is he going to get traded? When's he going to get traded, et cetera? You know, who would be the return in that trade? But yeah, if you're going to put me on the spot, I think I'm going back and forth between like the third and fourth seed in the East. Mm. To me, it's actually difficult to see the Sixers finishing much worse than that, as long as Joel Embiid is healthy. Like, he just dominates so casually, and the dominance is on both ends of the floor and so complete, and he makes things so much easier for his teammates. And as you hit on in the last segment, the Sixers do have a lot of good role players who know their jobs. Tobias Harris is not an all-star, but he's one of the better non-all-stars in the league. And, you know, there's reason for optimism with some of these young pieces, such as Maxey as well. So, yeah, I'm toggling between that 3-4. I'll go bold and say they finish with the 3 seed. I think Milwaukee and Brooklyn, it's clear that they're the favorites to come out of the Eastern Conference, and it would take something really tremendous and surprising for the Sixers to supplant those teams. But yeah, without really knowing still what's going to happen as far as the Simmons resolution and just weighing all the potential outcomes, we'll say it's a pretty good outcome for the Sixers that despite one of the more bizarre dramas in recent NBA history, they get the 3rd seed in the Eastern Conference. I'll go on the record with that one.
You mentioned Joel's dominance and how much that factors into them possibly getting that 3 seed and how much better he is than the opponents, particularly on both ends of the floor. And I'd asked this question to you before when we had Paul Hudrick on the podcast, but he's going to probably miss about 20 games at least. Are you concerned about what the Sixers team would look like when he's not on the floor with that dominance on both ends, particularly guarding the rim?
Yeah, you know, I'd say the best case scenario for the Sixers is maybe he only misses 10 or 15, but yeah, if it is 20, I think Andre Drummond, if we know anything about him, it's that he can be a capable starting center. Mm-hmm. Clearly he's a flawed player. And I think even in his early days as a Sixer, you've seen there are probably going to be some frustrating moments where he doesn't know his limits and he tries to do too much as a passer and he's trying to lead one man fast breaks and often finds those sort of adventures like aren't going to end well for the Sixers. And I think especially
I just have envisioned the whole thing in my head, and it just, that's pretty funny. Thinking about that play he made that was on Shaq and the Fool with the Cavs last season and things like that. But great point, but go ahead.
Yeah. And like, He shows up on those kind of low light reels because he just takes a lot of chances and he really believes in himself. And I think like, especially in the postseason, some of that's probably a little bit more concerning. Obviously it's never great to like have a rotation player who's a subpar free throw shooter like Andre Drummond as well. But as far as like, let's say Embiid doesn't play 20 games and Drummond starts those games, like no reason in my mind, this can't be at least slightly above 500. .500-ish team in those games. Of course, you're going to need Tobias Harris to step up. You're going to need Seth Curry to be efficient and run the offense. Ideally, Tyrese Maxey continues looking comfortable and confident as the first unit point guard. So, of course, things need to go well for the Sixers to fare okay without Embiid, but I see no reason why things would be disastrous without Joel Embiid this season. Just given Andre Drummond, he can start and win games for NBA teams for sure.
This is just something for me, because when Embiid's not in there, say Drummond's in the starting lineup, do you think Niang will be the five? Like, is that what they're what do you think they'll do there?
You mean like Niang would slide into the starting lineup?
Well, no. What I'm saying is if Drummond's in the starting lineup, if Joel's out, Drummond's in the starting lineup, what do you think they'll do at the five?
Behind him? Yeah. Based on the preseason, I would say Niang would probably get the majority.
Like the small ball five.
Minutes. I believe in the Embiidless preseason minutes, that was the main way Doc Rivers went about it. And then we also did see some of Paul Reed, who, of course, is an intriguing, chaotic.
Ready to player. Go. He is ready. Yeah. He is ready to go.
Yeah, you're not going to be confused about whether he's on the floor every second. You're going to be aware of his presence. I think the Sixers seem to like the idea of Niang as a stretch five and a guy who can create challenging matchups for the opposition and at least – in theory, hold his own defensively. So, that would be my expectation as things stand. And you'd imagine Paul Reed would also get the occasional crack at some minutes in those situations too.
A lot to like from that Sixers win. This is really the calm between the storms, so to speak, because we got the opener and the Brooklyn Nets on Friday. So enjoy this victory Thursday for all it's worth, because it will be a national TV audience and a lot of hoopla going into that opener at home against the Brooklyn Nets. Maybe we'll see Ben Simmons on the floor, even on the bench would be a revelation. Hopefully we will hear him speak at some point, because we would love to hear his side of things. And I hope he's not dealing with, I look at just how things have transpired. I hope he's not dealing with too much mental stuff that's causing him, not to speak or to be able to deal with this head on. I know there's not a lot of sympathy or empathy for Ben in this town right now, but you're not trying to see this guy like implode in any way, shape, or form. We're just talking about basketball. The team and the fans want him to honor the contract. They're seeking trade partners for him. We just want to, kind of get past this thing, and him speaking will help a lot of people, process this and bring some closure to it. But we'll see how that comes together here in the next couple of days. Noah, we love your work on NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com. You have a story up there now on the observations from last night. What are you working on? Anything in particular? I know it's a day off for the team, but anything you're working on in between games here?
Yeah, just a little bit. You touched on it earlier. Embiid had a good story to the reporters down there in New Orleans about the team dinners and just learning more about his teammates. So I'll just touch a little there on how the Sixers do seem to be embracing the collective side of things in light of this Simmons drama and kind of coalescing around the idea of the players that are here genuinely really want to be here and are excited about playing with each other. I'll have a story on that today. We'll be monitoring any developments of note with Ben Simmons. His suspension is technically over. I would be surprised if he plays tomorrow night, but Docker said, like, every day you're surprised here. So maybe he will play against the Brooklyn Nets, and that would be awfully dramatic. But whether or not Ben Simmons plays, I'll be down there at Wells Fargo Center Friday night and be on top of that Sixers home opener.
He is Noah Levick, our esteemed NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com Sixers writer. For Ben Berry, our producer extraordinaire, I'm Danny Pommels. Thanks for listening. Sixers Talk, brought to you by Wilmington University. Wilmu Works. We'll see you next time.